Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI. We now return to Cordishi and Coit.
Welcome back to Cordishi and Coit on WEEI. He's Nick Coit. I'm Scott Cordishi. Red Sox win their first game coming out of the All-Star break. An impressive 8-1 win at Fenway last night over the Dodgers. And joining us on the line to talk about that and other things, he covers the Red Sox and many things for the Providence Journal. Bill Koch is with us. Good morning, Bill. How are you?
Good morning, guys.
Hi, Billy. What's happening, man?
Just coming off a great start to the second half for the Red Sox. It was a very impressive performance last night against the Dodgers.
I agree. I mean, good team, best record in the National League, and to handle them the way that they did. And Nick and I just talked about this before the break, and it seems simple, but we feel like, you know, if Mookie Betts starts to come around, which he's showing signs of that, and if you can somehow, some way get Chris Sale and Rick Porcello to come around, then this team will be on to something. To me, those are the biggest reasons why this team has failed to live up to expectations so far.
Yeah, the supporting cast, quote-unquote, has been pretty good. If you look up and down the lineup, whether it's Rafael Devers or Christian Vasquez, certainly Xander Bogaerts has come into his own this year, being an all-star for the second time. You look through the rotation, Eduardo Rodriguez leads them in wins. Now, I know that stat has been devalued, but it seems like they play well when he pitches well. They're 10-0 in games where he goes at least six innings this year. So if your biggest concerns are whether or not Mookie Betts and Chris Sale are going to turn it on, I would say that you're in a place where you might start to make a little bit of a run here.
Yeah, I agree. And you, Eduardo Rodriguez, we were talking about him before the break too, Bill. And you know, we talked off air, Bill, about how Alex Cora and that coaching staff is very hard on Eduardo Rodriguez because they see the potential with the kid. And when he has a night like last night, you know, it makes you think he could really be such an anchor for their rotation. I'm not saying an ace, but an anchor and a guy that, if to me today they had to play the wild card game, I would seriously consider starting Eduardo Rodriguez next to, it's either him or David Price for me, because when he's good and he's on, team plays well in front of him.
I think you make a really good point, Nick. And you know, coaches talk about it all the time. You know, players should be worried when they stop coaching them, when there's apathy there.
Yeah.
You know, if you're hard on players, it means that you see ability there. And you know, Alex Cora has said that in the past. You know, he said, yes, I'm hard on Eduardo because I think he can be good. You saw last night the changeup. When he has that going, that's his signature pitch. He threw it 33 times. He got 11 swings and misses on it. The Dodgers had some really bad-looking at-bats, especially Corey Seager, who's just back off the injured list. You contrast him in the leadoff spot with Betts, who got the rally going later on in the seventh inning when the Red Sox put the game away. That inning, you know, really told the story of the game in my mind.
What do you think about the move of Eovaldi to the closer's role? I have mixed feelings about that because I do think, as much as we like to talk about this much maligned bullpen, I think a lot of the bullpen's problems this year have also been related to the fact that the starting rotation has been wildly inconsistent and bad at times. But what do you think about moving Eovaldi to the closer's role? Do you like it or not?
I think it's a salvage job, Scott. I think it's to get what they can get out of Nathan Eovaldi this season. If you just look at the timeline, for example, he threw a second bullpen on Friday, threw another one on Wednesday, and those are his first two since the setback that he had with the biceps tendonitis. If you just look at how long it will take to build him up as a starter, you're probably talking about mid-August before he's back. If he slots into that bullpen, he could do so, you know, maybe by as early as next week, and they might be able to deal for a starter. So I just think that they're trying to get the most out of him at this point. I think they realize that they're in a real race for the wild card. They're not even looking at the division. That's well up the road. It would take some help from the Yankees to overtake them in the AL East. But just in terms of their immediate competition, whether it be the Rangers, the Indians, the Athletics, the Rays, they need to make a move now. And so I think them moving Eovaldi to the bullpen when he comes off the IL, I think that's acknowledging the fact that, you know, they need to win some games here pretty immediately.
Talking with Bill Koch of the Providence Journal, and Bill, you just touched on it a little bit of the thinking of putting Eovaldi in the bullpen. Do you feel like I think everybody is crying out, we need bullpen help, we need bullpen help here for the Red Sox, but do you feel like, especially with the rumor going around about Zach Wheeler and names floating out for starters, do you feel like that's the direction that Dave Dombrowski is going to go here with the trade deadline, is trying to acquire a fifth starter instead of trying to address the bullpen?
He very well could, you know, because if they do think that Eovaldi can go into the bullpen and be healthy, you know, he could be a stabilizing piece out there. He's a guy who can go multiple innings. You know, it's not definite that they're going to use him as a closer per se. You know, they might just use him in the seventh or the eighth or the sixth or seventh, or, you know, sort of a bridge guy. But I think the most important thing is, they just need some more depth out there. You know, they really needed this All-Star break with 4 days off, because some of those guys have been used heavily, whether it's Matt Barnes or Brandon Workman or Marcus Walden or Ryan Brazier. They're all on track for career highs in appearances. So the idea is that Eovaldi can give them a little bit of a breath of fresh air going deeper into the second half. And if you end up dealing for a starter, you keep in mind that, you know, they really want to stay below the collective balance tax threshold. They're at about $239.6 million right now. So they have about $6 million to play with. That gives you prorated over the course of the last third of the year. You can get a starter who makes about $15 million a season. Now, whether or not the Red Sox are willing to part with some prospects, they're sort of in the you know, the beginning stages of reloading their farm system. So they do have a couple pieces to deal. But I would imagine that they're going to be reluctant to do much more than try to trade for a rental. So you're going to hear names like Zach Wheeler and Madison Bumgarner and a few others. You know, but I'm not necessarily certain that, you know, that's really going to pick up for the Sox, you know, at any point here until, you know, maybe the next couple weeks.
So Scott was talking about how Chris Sale is one of the guys that's underperformed this year, and, you know, something that stands out to me, too, is the fact that Christian Vasquez has been very good offensively as the catcher for the Red Sox this year. That's why he's been getting all the plate appearances and behind the backstop.
Catch 22, though.
Yeah, that's the thing. And so how do you feel like they should go forward here with Sale and who's catching him, Bill? Because it seems like we all know that Sandy Leone has sort of been a guy that's been linked to Chris Sale because I think he feels comfortable with him. But the downside of that is that Vasquez is hitting so well. So what's the solution there in terms of keeping the offense at that position while also being able to, you know, call the game the right way and have a guy like Chris Sale perform well?
Yeah, it's almost the law of unintended consequences. Vasquez has created a problem by hitting so well.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily want to take him out of the lineup. But, you know, no catcher plays 162 games or anything approaching it. And if you have to have one day off for Christian Vasquez every five, it should be the day that Chris Sale starts. You know, I know a lot of people look at catcher's ERA and they say that it's not really important and that it's a facade and, you know, that pitchers will pitch well regardless of who they're throwing to. But we're talking about pitching against the best hitters in the world, and there is something to be said for if you're 2 or 3% more comfortable throwing to a certain catcher. Because all a good hitter needs is those 2 or 3% for your pitches to be off, and you're going to get hit. I think you've seen it with Chris Sale this year. I just think that you need to maximize your asset. And if that means that, you know, Christian Vasquez serves as a designated hitter on those days, and maybe J.D. Martinez plays left field or something like that, you know, you could certainly be creative enough to keep Vasquez's bat in the lineup and put Sandy Leone behind the plate. You're looking at the top offense or one of the top offenses in the American League. It's worth sacrificing that every fifth day if that means getting Chris Sale on track, because you need this guy to be good in October. I know that last year they managed to survive without him. He was hurt down the stretch. You know, but you get the feeling that you're going to need something out of him at the very least during the regular season over the next couple months if you want to reach October.
Bill, last thing for me. I thought your colleague Mark Patinkin wrote a great piece in the Journal on the groundbreaking up in Worcester for Polar Park and how Rhode Island politicians just dropped the ball in trying to keep, as he put it, one of Rhode Island's crown jewels here in the Ocean State. Great, great piece.
Couldn't agree more, Scott. He spoke for me on that one. I just think that, you know, the Paw Sox were always one of those things that I felt like we wouldn't really realize what we had until they were gone. You know, and our municipal leaders failed us on this one. There's no two ways around it. We elect them to represent us and to negotiate us on our behalf. And in this case, they just didn't get it together. You know, whether it's the governor or the speaker of the house, you know, or anyone else involved in this deal, there wasn't enough communication there. There wasn't enough creativity there. You look anywhere else, anywhere that you go, and I know, you know, Scott and Nick, you guys both travel extensively for work. You see what goes on in other municipalities around new arenas, new ballparks. It's the injection that civic life often needs. It's that anchor to say, we're going to be here. There's going to be economic activity here. Invest here. Open businesses here. And you haven't seen that sort of spending or that sort of initiative in Pawtucket in a long, long time. And I just think that, you know, this was a great opportunity missed to keep the Paw Sox here. And I just, you know, I have that thought every time I drive to Fenway Park and I look to my left going on 95 North, that Apex site sitting vacant as it has for so long. And I just don't see another similar investment coming down the line. And I just, yeah, I look forward to 2 years from now when the Paw Sox aren't here, and I just think it's really going to be a sad day for Rhode Island. I thought Mark highlighted that very well.
Bill, as always, great stuff. Thanks so much for the time this morning. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Bill.
You got it, guys. Anytime.
All right, Bill Koch wrapping it up from the Projo with us here on Cordishy and Coit. Guess that's why we're the 50th ranked state in terms of being business friendly, right? You see that?
Yep.
Came out this week?
Oh, yeah.
You ain't first, you last.
Gotta love little Rhodey.
And I moved here.
I know. So did I.
Can't get out, can you?
You and I are both massholes.
I know. I know.
That'll do it for us. Special thanks to Bill Koch for joining us. Joe Passarelli, the man was trying to say on the other side of the glass. Laura Minicucci for putting this thing together. Mark and Kitchen coming up next. He's Nick. I'm Scott. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI. This is Cordishy and Coit.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.